welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 533, and it's been a while. Sorry about the pause. We have been doing stuff. Launchpad happened, conferences happened, PGC happened. So we've been pulled away on lots of other things, and it's meant no time, at least not time for more than one human to be in the same place, at the same room near a microphone. But today, we found another human. It's the return of Matthew Ford.
Hello.
Hello, dude. It's been a while. How have you been?
I have been okay. Yeah. Still stuck inside. Nothing's happened. I did go to a trip to B&Q the other day though. That was a nice change of pace, you know, from the same four walls.
I'm picturing you masked with a mop in one hand, backpack on the back with a small child sticking out the top of it. The child's got a shotgun, fighting your way through the diseased hordes. Yes, in the UK, just like in, I think, large chunks of America, we're back in lockdown. We're coming out technically in a week or so. And then we're in weird tiers, and then they're going to break it over Christmas so that we can all go and infect each other, have a nice super spreading Xmas, and then we can come back
to square one.
Exactly. Back in January, here are the cops coming to arrest the virus. Back in January to start all over again, like we've made no progress whatsoever. It's been, what a year. What a year it's been.
What a time to be alive.
We shouldn't do a year in review show.
No, because this year needs burning from history.
100%. We just need to get rid of it. We act like it never happened because, good God, it's been awful. So we do have a little bit to catch up on, but mostly we're just going to stick with the new stuff, folks, because we've got things about Tomb Raider, a new Tomb Raider game coming. We've had a peek at it. It looks interesting. We've got the most recent, possibly final chapter in the App Store versus Epic story that I know you're all dying to hear. We've got some Fortnite changes that are, for the first time, giving you access to the game in a way you never had before, plus a whole bunch of new releases, including the likes of Football Manager 2021 Mobile, my favourite franchise. I don't know what football is, Matt. Heroes War, Counter-Attack, Hocus 2, that one where you're a philosopher punching people in the face, which name has escaped me, and more. But first, the news. Lara Croft has had a slightly mixed reception on mobile, going all the way from very, very, very good in the Lara Croft Go to very, very bad with the Tomb Raider ports of the original games, which are just dreadful, Matt. Never play them. There's a new one on the horizon. It's called Tomb Raider Reloaded, and it's going to feature Lara Croft running up a wall in slow motion and then doing a flip and then being attacked by 1,000 identical-looking Tyrannosaurus Rexes in sunglasses. No, it's not. It's going to be coming out sometime in 2021. It's going to be developed by Emerald City Games and Squeenix. And we've seen a little teaser, which looks kind of nice. Have you seen the little teaser, Matt?
I have, yeah. It looked pretty good. I mean, it's hard to tell what the game's going to be because it is like sort of a,
I know,
like a CG sort of trailer and like if that's the actual art style it's going to be and that sort of thing when it transitions to actual gameplay. It's cool that they're going back to the like a bit of a mix of the 90s look and more updated.
Yes, the character art for her, or at least the way she's been animated in this little 3D trailer, she looks kind of like squat and not quite chibi-ish, but she's got the slightly big head and everything.
Yeah.
The Go franchise had that incredibly angular lo-fi, like she didn't even have a face. Mm. It was just like a poly look. But this one has brought back the bright jade top and the little cargo shorts, and it's not covered in mud and grey like in the modern ones. Which I do like, to be clear. I think the modern console games have been really good.
Yeah, fantastic.
But yes, this looks to be a little bit more playful. And we don't know if it's going to look anything like the 3D trailer, which is nice. And it's also going in slow motion, like The Matrix Reloaded. Mm.
It's also got the return of the dual pistols, which we haven't seen for a while, which is cool.
Did I not get to use dual? You might be right, actually. I'm thinking of the modern games. I don't think she does do dual pistols, does she?
No, it's more like a... like scavenger tools and that sort of thing, isn't it? Because she's on like islands and things.
Well, she gets weapons, but yeah, she's using them more like standard third person.
Yeah, it's crossbow, isn't it? Right. It's a bow and arrow.
Yeah. That's interesting. Ooh. Well, this is going to be a free to play game. I'm sure it'll have IAPs. We don't know a great deal beyond the trailer, but 2021 is the date, so I'm hype. I hope that they make something good because they have done before. They've proved more than most sort of companies which have tried to bring console releases on. They've proved that you can make a good mobile game out of your console franchise if you just have a little think. Mm. So let's hope they've done that.
It's a Lara Croft's Tomb Raider 25th anniversary next year as well. So that'd be
tie-in. Well, I guess they don't know where to go now because they finished that trilogy, the console trilogy with the Shadow of the Tomb Raider. That was the last one. Mm. And then I think that they feel like generally it underperformed slightly, or all the games slightly underperformed based on what they anticipated.
Yeah, it wasn't the same developer, was it, the last one as well? It was under Square Enix, but it wasn't Crystal Dynamics.
They used the B team for that one because they were working on something else.
That was right.
But I guess now is the time where they need to do something else. So there's going to be a pause, and then presumably we'll have a new series, a new franchise, new trilogy, whatever it might be, because it ain't going to die because Lara's still big in that gaming universe. Talking about big, Epic. Pretty big, isn't it?
I see what you did there, yeah.
That's the synonym link that I was going for. So, years ago, it seems now, we were talking about all that rubbish with Epic and the App Store. So Tim Sweeney giving it the big one about how they don't want to pay 30% and we're going to, you know, introduce shops into Fortnite and then they get kicked off the App Store and back and forth. It's a big war. The concession from Apple came. Apple has indeed dropped the commission from 30% to 15%, which is much more in line with what other app stores ask as a commission, as a section, a slice of your profits, things like Steam and all that business. So 15%. So Epic won. Tim Sweeney won. Right? Right, Matt?
Kind of. I mean, he's not won for himself, has he? He's not won for Fortnite. It's an indie victory.
Yes, so that's the small print. So Apple Store commission reduced to 15% brackets for indies, i.e. anyone who makes less than $1 million revenue off of their game.
Mm.
And in case you were wondering, that's not Epic.
No.
That's not Fortnite. So all the big companies still taking a 30% cut of that. So what's happened here is that Tim Sweeney has won for the little person, but Apple has managed to kind of go like, okay, we'll give 15%. Not to you, Tim. Go spit, Tim.
Yeah.
Which made me laugh.
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest, this is a very welcome move from Apple overall. Like, it's nice to have some like positive news, really, that, you know, indies that make under, what is it, $1 million dollars a year across their entire games catalogue are now going to be able to get more profits and, you know, be able to survive at the end of the day. I can't see a bad side to this, looking from it top to bottom. It just seems good news.
Which makes me suspicious. Mm. I can't see a bad side either, which I'm thinking that there is one. My instincts tell me that, like, all right, then, if you're going to drop that commission, then you're going to lose a large chunk of income. So where are you getting it back? I assume this is going to come back somewhere. You know, there's going to be some hidden fee, or there's going to be some hike in something else, or I can't just see them selling the idea of, nope, we're just losing a bunch of profits and that's it, out of the goodness of our hearts.
No, I can't see that.
I don't buy it. So I'll be interested to see where they're pulling that revenue back from.
Yeah. But the App Store generated, so to put it in perspective, the App Store generated about $50 billion in revenue in 2019. So it's not like they're short of cash. But you know what it's like. They're always going to want more.
And they are the company which has like the massivest markups of all out of any company. Like the amount an iPhone costs versus, as in costs to make versus what you actually pay for it is ludicrous. So you never look at those figures. It's just heartbreaking. Whenever you go in and say, £800 for a phone, it costs about 20p to make. So yes, I don't buy it, Matt. But Fortnite is also doing its own shake-up. So Tim Sweeney's baby, his poster child for Battle Royale games, is getting a subscription service for the first time.
Yes, at last.
Well, it caught me by surprise because in my head, the game was already a subscription service, which is wrong, but it just shows you like the mindset or the way that we kind of view these things nowadays. Because to me, a season pass, which is entirely optional, you don't have to like keep buying it every so often. But if you play Fortnite and you want to be up on the latest events, you kind of need to.
It's a big part of it, yeah, for the costumes and that sort of thing and additional bonuses. I mean, yeah, as you say, you can play the game completely without of it, but they all want the latest costumes. And if you don't have the latest costumes, there is this thing in like playgrounds and stuff. Oh, you're not as cool. And there's like, I've seen loads of stuff that's been covered.
You
in,
don't
like,
have
papers.
Thor.
Yeah.
Where's your Thor skin? So in my head, the season passes have always been a kind of like soft subscription service. It's like every 3 months, you kind of have to get it or you're out of the loop. But this is an actual proper like bona fide subscription thing for the first time in the game. What's it all about? How does it work?
So the previous battle pass used to cost $7.99, so, and that was paid over like approximately every 3 months. Okay. The new one is called the Fortnite Crew, and this is a subscription that is $9.99 a month in pounds and $11.99 in the US. They're launching on the 2nd of December alongside the arrival of the game's Chapter 2, Season 5, Season Pass. And it'll be a big thing for their new Galactus event, which is from one of the big Marvel baddies that's happening next Tuesday. They did the black hole. I don't know if you saw that one. They destroyed the game internally, which is quite cool. So I'm going to try and jump in for this one. But you are going to get an exclusive cosmetics pack, the Battle Pass itself, and 1,000 V-Bucks, which is approximately £6.49/$8.
Okay. All right, so it's kind of like you're automatically just buying a V-Bucks refresh every month with a few extra perks on the side.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, as I say, it's once. Yeah, but that is
if
one way to look.
If the V-Bucks are worth about like, you know, £7 or something, you're paying a tenner. It's just like you're buying dedicated. Here's my £6-7 worth of V-Bucks every month to spend on whatever I want, and then also here's some cosmetics and skins and access and stuff.
Yeah, bonuses wise and everything. I mean, at the end of the day, it's not cheap. I mean, it depends how dedicated you are to Fortnite. I mean, you got to put it in comparison to services like, you know, Disney Plus and Netflix and stuff. They're all cheaper than this one Battle Pass for this game. So I think you have to be really into that ecosystem to commit.
And I haven't played it enough to know how much value this kind of thing adds. To me, it's all just like cosmetics and stuff that I don't need. The idea of spending what would be £120 on like skins in a year is insane. But then, you know, I'm not a Fortnite person. Maybe it's really useful. I shrug. I'm sure loads of people will get it, and I'm sure Tim Sweeney will be able to get his 70% of those purchases.
Well, that's what I mean. And Fortnite is going to make so much more money again because of this. Yeah. So it is still the biggest game in the world. And yeah, Tim Sweeney will be rolling this once more.
All right, then. The other thing worth mentioning is a new Warhammer game on the horizon. Total War Battles, Warhammer, is coming to iOS and Android. There is a fancy-looking trailer which only shows a little tiny bit of what might be gameplay of someone stomping around a map looking, and it looks like an overworld map rather than an actual battle. But I see a couple of bits of battles. You've played the Total War games and the Total War Warhammer games, and they're generally fairly well reviewed. They're kind of good, solid 8 out of 10s. This one's been officially licensed by Creative Assembly, who are the guys behind it, and also the guys behind Alien Isolation, if you're interested. Yeah, there was a real weird, like, kind of, you would not put it, if you looked at their catalogue, you would not put that game among them.
But
they did an amazing, amazing job on that. So they've given it over, and they're working with NetEase this time to make something mobile-focused. Looks promising, but I'll believe it when I see the gameplay in action. So this is without a release date at the minute. All they've confirmed is definitely App Store and Google Play. My guess would be sometime in the new year. But check out the trailer if you fancy a look. Total War Battles Warhammer. Out and about this week, I suppose one of the biggest releases is Football Manager 2021 Mobile. And the things I don't know about Football Manager, Matthew. Let me tell you.
What would you like to be enlightened about?
No, I'm not going to be too obsequious and ask what football is. What's soccer? I know what it is. It's just I have zero interest. I've known people who are just like proper obsessed with it to the point where, and I mentioned it on the show before, speaking about people who would, like, on the last day of the league, they actually dressed up in a suit.
It was brilliant. Yeah, I've heard people do that before.
Which I thought was delightful. But it's one of those games, one of them games, that, you know, if you're into it, you are into it. Because you can't, I don't think you can casually play Football Manager, because there's just so much to it. It's so insanely granular. And, you know, I look at it and it just gives me a kind of a cold sweat. Just like a billion 100%. Menus.
It is, you are absolutely right when you say it's one of them games, because I've got friends that don't really play many games, but they play this, you know, yeah, excessively. Okay. This is their game, as to say. Like, they don't do the suits, as far as I know, but...
No, that's a bit much. Well, the one thing I have heard is that people have been very happy with this one. I've been looking around, because other people know more than me, and the response from this has been strong. People saying, like, this is one of the best releases they've ever done. I did have a little look into it, because I'm including it in a video that's going up later today. And the additions they've made this time are things like non-verbal gestures. So when you're having talks with your team, or you're engaging in negotiations, or you're talking to the press, you can hit what I guess look like emotes, but you can tell yourself to, like, open your arms widely, or, you know, like, point a finger or something like that. So it's trying to, like, control the body language of your manager as they interact with the press.
Make it more realistic.
Yeah, exactly. And when you're giving pep talks, and it has an actual impact on the mood of the team or the person that you're talking to, and that has an effect on everything else. So I found that quite interesting.
That's cool. Yeah, they have come a long way. I've dabbled with them in the past and everything, but if you look at them the last few years, you're actually in the press room, you're on the sideline.
Yeah.
I love that. It's something I'd more likely jump into.
And it goes down to the team level, so they're messing with the way that, like, your team chemistry behaves, like putting different players together will cause different effects based on their interactions and, I guess, moods and stuff with each other. You're talking 60 different leagues, 24 different countries, all fully licensed, as they all have, to the point where this version of the game has factored in COVID. It's factored in the pandemic, and it's changing the way in which the league plays out. I said plagues out. Talk about Freudian slip. Plays out based on the state of the world as it is. So this is going to be, Football Manager COVID edition.
It's clever because it's also, it integrates social media. I don't know if you've seen that in the trailer and stuff.
Yes.
I don't know if that's new or that's been the last couple of years, but it does seem like to be a big thing this time around.
Yeah. So this is a premium thing as always, £8.99. It's gone live on every platform simultaneously. Haven't played it, obviously, because I never, ever will, Matthew. But everything I hear is very positive. So if this is your bag, then you can go grab that right now. Other things. So I guess we're going back a few weeks. So what have you been playing? I saw this game, was it Pathless?
The Pathless, yes.
Yeah.
So this is from Annapurna Interactive, so they published it, so they're known for, you know, Sayonara Wild Hearts, Donut County, Telling Lies, you know, they've got so many games on the horizon, and then whenever they publish a game, you know, it's sort of all eyes on. Developed from Giant Squid, who did Abzu.
Yes, the floaty water experiential game.
That's the one. And the CEO himself worked on Journey as the art director.
Right.
So it's got a good background. It's out on Apple Arcade. It's also out on console, so PS4, PS5, and Windows. It's the story of a hunter who's going to reclaim light from an island that's been cursed and is covered in darkness.
Right.
So as a hunter, you are going to destroy the God Slayer, and you've got a bow and arrow of light, and how the gameplay works is there's all these targets dotted about. And every time you sling your arrow and hit it, your character moves quicker. And then it's all about chaining targets together with your arrows for quick movement.
Right.
If you think Breath of the Wild, it looks very inspired. There's no map. You just set off and you've just got to explore and figure it out for yourself. But, you know, it ushers you towards certain places. You start off on the Forest Plateau. Again, very Zelda-like. If you've played Breath of the Wild, that's very similar.
Mm.
And there's these three towers that are cursed, and you have to go up and find these sort of artifacts. So you find the artifacts and you bring them back to the towers, and then you reclaim light, and then that portion of the land goes back to normal. And then you go from land to land to land. So I've only done the first two at the minute, Redwood Step, I think that's what you say. And there's these monsters from the God Slayer. So one's was a giant elk that follows you around the map constantly, and if you get caught in this massive, like, hurricane where the elk presides, get away until you've brought all the light back, and then you fight it in, like, a boss fight. You also have an eagle as your pet friend who lets you, like, who carries you around. Yeah, it's lots of fun. It's a beautiful world. The music's very tranquil. It's also very serendipitous in, like, a cool way, because it's I feel like it's designed around, like, happy accidents.
Mm-hmm.
You go discover something. You're like, oh, there's that. What's around that corner? What's down that hole? And you go and look, and they want you to find that.
All right, that's interesting. I'm looking at versions that compare, the mobile version with the PC and the PS4, and because it's doing this cross-platform release, and it's very different on mobile to how it is on the PCs, but not in a bad way. It's just like they've obviously made it a much simpler art style.
Yes.
And where there's huge amounts of flame pouring out of the screen on PS5, there's, like, you know, a red square or red rectangle in the background. But it still works because of these minimal graphics. It's a nice look. I can't believe you got, like, 20 minutes into that description and then went, oh, yeah, and there's an eagle. Like, it's all about the falcon, Matt. Come on. You're running around. You got a little falcon buddy chasing you about and helping you out. It's brilliant. Everyone needs a little eagle.
It's very true. You can pet the eagle excessively as well. Like,
well, that's all we need to know. 10 out of 10.
If you do get caught by the curse, you have to, like, pet the eagle and wipe all the curse off him, and then he can jump again.
It's like cleansing the timeline by posting a nice picture.
Exactly.
Of an eagle. That's it. Okay, so this is available Apple Arcade only, so you need to have your subscription. Or it's on all the bloody consoles and that as well. So, you know, you've got options, but yeah, it's... stick with mobile. Well, it's fine. There are other things that have been released this week, but I've been playing a little bit of a catch-up. So Tales of the Neon Sea was the first one I did, which is like a point-and-click adventure. Mm-hmm. Blade Runner-style noir. You're a detective wandering around doing investigations and murders and that kind of stuff, PI. It's not quite as gloomy as Blade Runner. It's got the nice old-fashioned LucasArts style, you know, pixel art. It is classic, you know, real point-and-click adventure business with everything that entails. It's almost a bit more puzzly than it is adventure-y. Some of the puzzles are quite hard, and it means that you lose track of what's going on a little bit. At least that's how I found. The story is quite interesting in terms of detecting, well, you're dealing with, like, robot butlers, and you're trying to get out of your own bloody house because you can't get out because you've set weird traps in there for yourself. And it's sort of self-aware as well, and it makes lots of little nods to other franchises. And it's okay. I like the world. I think that the puzzles and the story sit on completely opposite sides of the room to each other.
Okay.
And they could do with talking a bit more. And that some of the puzzles are a bit too obtuse to the point where by the time you complete them, you're like, why am I here? What am I doing? So, yeah. But that's available right now, Tales of the Neon Sea. And the other thing is I've been getting back into Fruit Ninja because Fruit Ninja 2 came out. And it made me think, like, has it been 10 years since Fruit Ninja came out? And I assumed 2 had already appeared. And
yeah,
hadn't.
I was
going
to say. Mm.
They've just done loads of updates and, you know, tweaks and changes. And, you know, they've done event things and Halloween editions and stuff like that. They've not done the actual 2.
Mm. Big deal. It'd be like when Fortnite 2 comes out sort of thing.
Yeah. Mm. Well, Fruit Ninja is like one of the proper original App Store classics up there with like the original Angry Birds and Cut the Rope and Where's My Water and all that.
I remember playing it in college, being sat in between lessons, just swiping away.
Yeah. Because at the time, the touchscreen had just been invented, and the idea of a bit of fruit coming up and then you slicing it with your finger and it actually slicing like along the line that your finger draws, that was huge. Mm. That was such a novelty. And of all games, it was one of the games that best demonstrated, hey, here's something you can't do with a controller. If you try to do this with a D-pad, or if you try to do this with an analog stick, like, you know, press X and then swipe or drag to the... it would not feel anywhere near as good. So it was just like the perfect mixture of form and function. And also, to me, I think it introduced this idea of like, this is going to be a good platform for casual games. Mm. We're going to see this big boom in casual kind of, you know, twitchy arcade. And it exemplified that. It did it really well. And to be honest, it still kind of works. And that's what 2 is. They've made a bunch of changes. The main one being multiplayer.
Okay.
So you've got competitive multiplayer where you're on one side of the screen, or your ninja is, because you've got an avatar now, and your opponent who you hook up with online is on the other side. And then what happens is fruit pops up, but the fruit has different colored outlines. So I'm blue, my enemy is red. So every time fruit pops up and it's glowing blue, I swipe it. And then when it glows red, the enemy does. If I accidentally get a bit overzealous and start swiping his red fruit, I get points deducted. It penalizes me. Yeah. Just like in the standard game, if a bomb appears and you accidentally strike the bomb, boom, it explodes and you lose points. So it's about kind of being patient, keeping your eyes peeled and making sure that you get all your swipes in. And then you get power-ups and buffs as well. So you can do things where when the fruit pops up on screen, you have a buff where you press it and all the fruit goes supersized. So it's easier to hit and it's worth more points. You have a wave buff where you can tap it and then this big kind of wave of fruit just goes onto the screen. So it's about using that at the right moment where A, you're going to be able to maximize your combos because you're trying to drag your fingers through as many as you can in one swipe and as quickly as you can. And also, possibly, you can use it to trip them up. So when their fruit is due to appear, because it goes in turns in waves, you can press the wave button and you'll kind of cover theirs with all of your fruit and they can't really swipe it because if they do, they're going to hit yours. So there's a little bit of tactics in there. It works really, like, surprisingly well, especially as it's happening in real time. Seeing someone else's swipes appearing on the screen is slightly like, oh, weird. And as I say in like the review, it's not going to be the next eSport or anything, but it is diverting. It does add something fresh. And then they've got a whole bunch of new modes for the standard version. So in addition to the classic just swipey, swipey, swipey score chaser, there's like a league now. So you kind of keep, you're gradually unlocking, you're earning points from every single round you play. And as you do so, you start unlocking perks. And then there's a season. There's a season pass. A season pass on Fruit Ninja. Because this is how everything works now, which is hilarious. I didn't buy it. But there's two tracks for the season pass as well. There's a free track and there's a premium one. So you can kind of compete in the seasons without having to pay anything.
Do you think it's big enough of a leap from the original Fruit Ninja to the second? Because obviously, as you say, it's been such a long time since the first, and to put number two actually on the box and everything, like...
Yeah, I do. I do, actually. I think it's notably different because when you go back to the core version, because there is like a kind of classic mode, and it does suddenly feel quite quaint when you just play what is effectively the original Fruit Ninja. So adding in the multiplayer really does change it. And then having leagues where you're not just swiping it for no reason. You're swiping it to unlock stuff. You're, you know, getting perks for your characters. You're unlocking emotes. You're getting power-ups. You're upgrading your blade. You got an actual sword this time. And you can get loads of different types of swords that do different things. So, yeah, they've actually added quite a lot to the core. I still think it's just a light, you know, game that's almost just a cathartic stress reliever, really. And the other things are just sort of welcome distractions. But I was surprised to pick it up again after 10 years and go ch-ch-ch-ch and still find it quite satisfying in that way that it just is to go swish, swish, swish. And giving you more of a reason to come back, I guess it works. I don't think it's going to be huge. And it's certainly not going to be the phenomenon the original game was because that novelty is long since gone.
Yes.
But is it still fun as a thing to do? And is there enough content there to justify you downloading it for free and playing nothing and just giving it a go now and then? Yeah. It's fun. I'm glad I have it on the phone.
Good stuff.
That's out now, App Store and Google Play. As far as this week goes, we've also got a few other things. I don't know how much of these you've seen, but Heroes War Counterattack is now live, which is one of those Japanese ARPGs. Actually, I lie. It might be Korean ARPG. I'm not sure. I have to double check. But, you know, enemies lining up and then your heroes lining up and then fight, fight, fight. You do a little bit of turn-based stuff and a little bit of freedom of movement. So every turn you can kind of move your character around a little bit, like using a D-pad. But then it's almost cosmetic. Really what you're doing is trying to get them out of the way of area effect attacks. And then you're just tapping on an enemy and hitting fight. You know, tap, attack, unlaunch a special power. Rinse, repeat. And it's got all the usual billions of characters, billions of menu screens with billions of upgrades and things. And it's just like, when I first looked at it, I my brain did a little recoil. I was like, oh God, I can't be arsed with any of this. I said in the video that, like, really, you have to be into this stuff to like it. You have to be into that kind of, you know, ARPG thing. And if you do, you might go for it. If not, maybe it's not for you. Heroes War Counterattack over there. Name for that one. Now, did you ever see Oklos? Oklos, I'm going to pronounce it.
No, I feel like I should by that name.
Yeah, well, it was out five years ago or something. It was a Devolver Digital game. Came out on PC.
Okay.
And it was quite a novel thing because you take control of... It's like playing out with Greek mythology and fighting the gods. But rather than it being God of War, you play as a philosopher who's running around the town and you recruit followers... So you start getting this like this mob behind you, and then you fight your way through the levels and the you know, centurions and whatnot, and you're battling through with the mob at your back. So the idea is that you're not the warrior, you just like con people into doing it for you using your sweet philosophizing skills. So it's like Pikmin, but right. with
that's a good way.
Yeah, but you are running around ancient Greece and, you know, battering initially some, you know, people, some Romans and that. But by the end of it, you are kicking the crap out of gods and weird, you know, minotaurs and monsters are appearing. Mm. So that's the idea. It's come out on mobile in the form of Oklos Sigma. Premium game. I think it's about $2.99. It seems to have come over quite nicely in terms of the controls, because it's not a dual stick shooter or anything like that. It's more just like dragging your mob around and then your mob are doing stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, the Pikmin aspect of it. So that suits quite nicely to mobile. But that is available, and there's a little video up of that. 2.5D art style is very nice. It's got that, what's that Switch RPG that had a really nice, slightly desaturated art style where it's like 3D, but the characters are 2D?
Octopath Traveler?
There you go. That. It's that. But more colourful art style wise. So nice look, and it seems to suit mobile pretty well. Oklos Sigma is the name. Embracelet is something we talked about during Launchpad. It's a point and click adventure, but it's 3D. Low poly style. This is an indie game. And you are given a magical bracelet by your granddad, which he got from an island, and you have to go and explore the Norwegian island, and you learn secrets about your family and yourself.
Hopefully. And, from the creators of Sing Song and Adventure, Mermaid of the Milky Way.
That's right. Could it get more indie? But the idea is the bracelet itself, it kind of manipulates time so you can reverse time and you can repair objects and things like that. So there are mechanics, but most of it is kind of conversational. You're wandering around talking to people. It's 3D, I should say, but it's got that point and click adventure, Telltale Games, go and chat to people. And find stuff out. But it's one of these, it's going for the emotions, it's doing it well. We looked at it early on Launchpad and thought it was dead sweet, which is why we included it. And I think it's being reviewed pretty well as well. So Embracelet is the name of that one, and that's currently available. There's also Hocus 2, which is a geometric puzzle game. The original game came out in 2015. This one's out now. I haven't played the new one, but the original one is very lo-fi. You put in a box in a slot, but you're moving around in possible architecture. Nice and neat. Maybe that'd be of interest. Is there anything that I've missed? What about Switch stuff?
Hyrule Warriors Age of Calamity. So this is the hack and slash title developed by Omega Force and published by Koei Tecmo. Started from Dynasty Warriors franchise, then moved to Hyrule Warriors, which was the Zelda take on the series in 2014.
Yeah, so is an actual collaboration between those two things, or is it just like it plays a bit like Dynasty Warriors? Or were the Dynasty Warriors lot involved?
Full on crossover it is.
And this is a sequel to that?
It's a prequel. So the... yeah, it's the Zelda lore thing. It's not a prequel to that. Hyrule Warriors was like a celebration of the Zelda franchise as a whole. And they just brought... It was like a one-off story. Let's you know, Avengers Endgame it, bring everyone back. And right. And this new one is a prequel to Breath of the Wild. And it tells you how the whole chaos in the kingdom, the calamity that sets up Breath of the Wild happened. So, because if you play Breath of the Wild, it's after a massive war, and this is the war, and you're playing
this
through
is
it.
This is the Clone Wars, if we're using the Star Wars analogy. Yes. This is episode 2. Here's what happens in the wars. But it's using the same kind of Dynasty Warriors style gameplay, right?
100%. Yes, that's the one.
Okay, right. But we haven't played this yet. You haven't got your hands on it.
We haven't, no. I'm going to hopefully play it over Christmas sometime. I haven't got my hands on it. But yeah, very excited, obviously.
I saw a lot of love for the first one. I've seen mixed responses to this one. But obviously, yeah, we haven't played. We can't judge.
So. No, but it has shipped 3 million copies in 4 days. So,
all right.
Making itself the best-selling entry in the Warriors franchise. So that's the power of Zelda for you.
Fair enough. Yeah, all right then. You don't have to be good. You just have to have Zelda on the title. That'll do the trick. Nice. Okay, so that's out on Switch right now. We'll leave it there this week. We're going to try and keep these podcasts a little bit shorter than we used to, just because we're now all incredibly busy, because there's now more events than ever we had before. Launchpad suddenly is a thing that's going to happen like probably 4 times a year. So we've got other things to do. But we want to carry on doing the podcast, of course, because it's nice to talk to you, Matthew.
Absolutely.
Mainly.
Well, yeah.
Like to have the chat.
It's a bit of fun.
Yep. I understand there are some thousands of people listening, but, you know, it's all about me, really. So thank you all for listening today, and thanks for bearing with us during the pause. We're not doing the video stuff anymore, incidentally. That was something that we were doing, again, when we had more time. And it was just a little bonus to the podcast, a supplementary thing. As we're having to choose very carefully what we put time into at the moment, we're just sticking with audio from now on. Makes it clean and easy. So do subscribe if it's your first listen. And we hope to hear from you, because I can hear you in my head applauding us when we say things.
Help!
The correct response from Matthew there. Thank you all for listening. Come and join us again next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.